Hi, it's producer Chris from The Bugle here. Did you know that I have a new series of my podcast, Richie Firth Travel Hacker, out now? It's the show where Richie Firth and I talk about how to make travel better in our very special way. In this series, we discuss Lime Bikes, Teslas, the London Overground, and a whole bunch of other random stuff that possibly involves wheels or tracks or engines of some variety. God, what a hot sell this is. I mean, you must be so excited. Listen now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
When unboxing your object, please verify that the above items are included in the package. If any components are missing, please contact your dealer or distributor or nearest service centre. After verifying that all components are present and in good condition, you can assemble your new equipment. Please retain the box and packaging materials in case you need to ship your object in the future. Remember to power off your object and unplug the charge cable before assembling, mounting, accessories or cleaning the gargle. This is The Gargle, the sonic glossy magazine to The Bugle's audio newspaper for a visual world. I'm your host, Alice Frazier, and your guest editors for this week's edition of the magazine are Neil Delamere.
Hello.
Hello, and James Colley.
Also hello.
I was hoping one of you would choose something original, but you've really gone with the both ordering the same thing at a restaurant vibe there.
Greetings. Welcome aboard the Neil Juke Train.
Hello.
Stick with the classics. Well, before we stand facing one another in the mirror and engage with the existential crisis that is this week's top stories, let's have a look at the front cover. The front cover this week is the first fully electric vehicle that can both fly and travel on roads that has received US government approval from the Federal Aviation Administration. This is it's a flying car, James Colley, and that's our front cover model. Are you excited?
I am, but look, I was worried last time I was on here that I derailed everything too early, but I can't stop thinking about who came up with hello, because they really nailed it. And there was one day where one peasant ran into another peasant and went, hello, and they went, what did you... Ooh, that's good. Mind if I use that? And that's a really good word to have come up with.
They're just poking each other in the eye with sticks before that, and then one guy just branched out a little bit, and then that's loads of wars were avoided. James, you're right. We need to build a statue to that man or woman.
Every wave hello is a wax on, wax off, trying to parry a stick that's coming towards your eye. That's the origin of waving. The satirical cartoon this week is a series of scientists finally discovering the exact political impact of a viral zinger. Very exciting.
Can I ask a question about the electric car?
You may.
Well, I just got an electric car, and you like to think that you're doing your bit for the environment, but people don't necessarily obey the rules that we've all assumed are needed for a coherent society. I pulled into Sligo train station to get some charge. All of the car parking spaces were rammed, and a woman was in the electric car parking space. I would like to know what you think of this. I went up to her and said, would you mind moving your car? It's an older car. You don't need the charge. And she said, no, I'm not moving my car. I collect my son from the train, and I don't care if you need a charge or not. I'm not moving the car.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel that's less to do with electric cars than it is to do with the degradation of civility in the modern society, particularly post-COVID, where we're all living these modular and insular lives. But sure, make it about electric cars.
That's what her bumper sticker said. That is so bizarre. It went all the way around the back of her car. This is about the degradation of society post-COVID. It was weird. And I said, genuinely, you're completely in the wrong. And she goes, well, I'm not moving the car. My son has baggage. And I thought, I bet he does with a bitch like you for a ma. But I did not say that. I couldn't believe that. Anyway, that's my first gripe of the podcast.
Well, I'm glad that you were the better man in that instance.
Yes.
I've made my own kind of environmental shift that I now have a keep car. So I use the same car every time. Whereas before I'd used to dispose of them after every trip. And it just became a bit wasteful for me. So it smells, but I think it's nice to just keep it for a few trips.
Oh, single use cars. Do you remember those? They were great.
Well, I mean, the thing about a keep car is that people get them thinking that they're going to reuse them and then they don't.
You always forget them. You leave them in the house. There's loads of them, just like a mini stacked up on a Yara, stacked up on an iGo.
Now it's time for our top story. Top story this week. Humans have pumped so much groundwater that the Earth's axis has shifted, according to a study. Now, sometimes you can have a moment of romantic engagement where you're like, wow, the world moved. But actually, it was just because somebody was drinking a lot or probably using enormous quantities of water to wash their microchips. James Colley, you've drunk some water before. Can you unpack this groundwater story?
Yeah, I want to start off just clarifying a couple of things. They say humans. I didn't do this. So if you're listening and you're trying to put the blame on me, I did very little to none of this. So I would say start elsewhere. Come back to me. Sure, we all share some blame, but I drive a keep car, so I'm pretty good environmentally. This is what is called in scientific parlance a big boo-boo. So as we all know, we all the infrastructure that the modern world is built on was created in what was known as the about era of history, and we are all have the luck to be born in the end find out era of human history. So this is a part of the end find out journey we're on. Now, we have to start by defining groundwater, or as it's known, water. Now, people drink it, cows drink it, you can put half a glass of it apparently on this show, quite a bit. It helps water crops so people can eat and does all the other things that you can think of that water does. Now, this water has been taken out of the ground, really taking away the ground part of groundwater and making it just water, and we changed the balance of the planet doing this, which you might think, how much water does that take? Turns out a lot. 2,150 gigatons, which in terms you can understand is more than you drink on a day, more than you should use in the shower, even when it's a really cold morning and you're like focusing on one of those imaginary fights in your head. And isn't it funny how when you have one of those fights in the shower in your head, your opponent always falls into just the trap you wanted them to fall into, and then you win the argument. You never lose a shower argument, or if you do, you should really look into that. But I also want to put it in. So like if the Earth's axis shifts, here's what it means. If the Earth's axis shifts, the sea levels could rise and we all die. But if we don't extract the groundwater, then there's no crops and we all die. So the good news is we're all going to die anyway on a long enough timeline. So this, like all other news, doesn't really matter. But in the interest of controversy, I want to try and build it up a bit more. If you were to imagine the Earth as like a ball flying through the air and rotating, well, if that ball was to experience a sudden change, say, colliding with the stumps of a batsman who has walked out of his crease before the over has been called, well, we can see that would cause a lot of water to be wasted and water to fall specifically out of the eyes of the English people. So that's kind of what happened in this situation, but on a more global scale.
I have taken two things from that entire rant. One, all news should be what you said to the broadcaster walking out and going, all news makes no difference because we're all going to die anyway, and here's the weather. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, I haven't followed the Ashes thing, but I know two Australians look happy and lots of English people are sad. And as an Irish person, that is generally enough for me.
Yeah, well, I have to say I was slightly worried when I read this headline that the Earth had shifted on its axis because of the number of half a glass of water jokes that I had made. But turns out that it's cows. after all.
It's always the bloody cows, isn't it? Like, the secret they say enemy. That humans are the problem, but it really does come back to cows. And look, let's not get into who put the cows there. There are just cows sometimes. That's not our fault, but it's really the cow's fault.
Yeah, I believe that.
We need to put this in terms people understand, though. It's 2,150 gigatons of groundwater we've extracted from underground between 1993 and 2010 because Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water and they took so much now that the globe is tilting to the right. A gigaton of water is the tears shed from one Adele album in 1 year. That is the scientific measurement of it. I say this with a great degree of guilt, given that there's two Australians on the call and Ireland as a country. Well, I found when any time I go to Australia and you do gigs there, you can mess with Australians with great sense of humour, except when you mention how much water we waste on this side of the world. Like, sometimes, lads, I'm going to watch this. So there's four people on this call. Ped is the producer. Ped, sometimes I turn on my dishwasher in Dublin and there's nothing in it. Like, I just like the noise. It's quite soothing. I just want to, yeah, look, the two of them couldn't have to react. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's fine.
It's like it falls out of the sky here, lads. It's bizarre. We don't have to use it to put out bushfires. It's unbelievable. We use water with wild abandon in this country. We leave taps on when we're brushing our teeth. I've got a bidet for a dog.
I still remember the first time I saw somebody doing that, leaving the tap on while they brush their teeth.
Wait, that? I thought that was a bit.
No, it's not a bit. They just let it run.
Well, we do, yeah. Irish children are baptised like with a power hose. There's no need for it. We just really want to get the Holy Spirit in.
We have to wait until the last child is born and then baptise them all in the one pail.
Does this mean, right, if the earth tilts entirely then, that all those animals that use that internal compass to navigate, is that what's going to happen then? Are we just going to get like pigeons getting on buses? God.
I don't think they're navigating via outer space, but we can find out.
Yeah, well, what is GPS if not a satellite? But don't they use the magnetic force of the Earth or something? Don't they do that?
Yeah. I don't know what they do. I'll have to ask a bird.
Am I going to wake up with a salmon in my paddling pool going, apparently this is where I was born. So you might want to get the kids to look away because these eggs won't fertilise themselves. I just want to know.
Maybe the problem is that salmon swim upstream and you've been running the f***ing tap all night, so it thinks there's a river there.
This, you know, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. I didn't think that would be the one to come and get me, James, but apparently that's it. I want to look out my window in Dublin and just see the wildebeest herds trying to get across the River Liffey. Just these South African. It's the wrong way, Brian. Brian, we've gone the wrong way.
And now it's time for your ads. Your ad section now, because you can't be what you can't buy. Are you a man suffering under a curse, the hours of which are measured by the falling petals of a rose? Try prolonging your tortured life while waiting for true love's kiss by refreshing the rose with a new, clean half a glass of water. Half a glass of water, the easiest price to pay for more precious time. And a new novel is out by self-published romance maven and online bestseller Dancy Lagarde, third in the 24-book Chaucer's Darling's medieval history fantasy romance series with a supernatural twist. The book is called The Man of Law's Dilemma. Bedrick is a man of law, rigid, upright, unquestioningly loyal, an honourable member of a werewolf clan. He was sent as a child hostage to foster with the childless Lord Gauntleroy, eventually earning his trust and becoming the captain of his guard. Torn for years by the cruel way his old friend and liege treated his young and unwanted bride, he still grieves a man who was like a father to him. What is he to do when he's tasked with accompanying his dead lord's virgin widow to a nunnery, but fulfil his duty with the utmost probity, even if it means standing by torturously as the woman he's always secretly loved goes to marry yet another other man, and this time the other man is God? Custance is a genteel widow of some independent fortune, sold by her father, scorned by her noble lord of a husband, daunted by the prospect of governing his estate, and haunted by the true visions she sees of the future. She wants to retreat from the world of men and commits to her only respectable course, the safety of the nunnery. As they travel together, cast by circumstance into undeniable proximity, the magnetic attraction grows. The werewolf in him senses his fated mate, and the man in him senses her boobs, and her visions grow increasingly ominous. At last, one thunder-stricken night, she has a vision of Bedrick in danger and runs to him in her nightgown. The passion growing between them flames into something undeniable, and suddenly they have a problem on their hands. His erection. Can a werewolf
grow
and
up,
a maiden...
this is literature.
Can a werewolf and a maiden widow together find a place in the world, prevent a war, and achieve mutual climax on horseback while arguing about directions? Find out in The Lawman's Dilemma, out now in all park fountains and local Chinese restaurants.
Finally, the Alice Fraser autobiography that we have waited for.
There's a book coming out. A Dancy Lagarde reader is coming out. It's available and you can pre-order it on unbound.com. If you go to thebuglepodcast.com, you can find a way to support the Dancy Lagarde reader, which is going to be happening soon in all illegitimate bookshops, I assume.
Please, can we do the audiobook, please?
Yes, yes. Look, if we sell enough copies, we will do the audiobook. So there's a motivation for you all to pre-order.
James is the werewolf. I'm the horse.
I can't... This is a book about a werewolf's boner, and but it's called The Gentleman's Dilemma. You're really burying the lead. I would have called this Dances with Wolves.
That's all that werewolves ever want to do is bury the lead, and it's the lawman's dilemma, because the essential conflict is between a man of honour and his passionate lust for a woman that he can absolutely have, but feels like he can't.
Yeah, it should be called Get Out of Your Own Head. It's fine.
I mean, that is 90% of romance novels.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Recycling news now, and this is the news that AI isn't all bad. Apparently, we can train AI to recognize waste for recycling, which is more than I can often do. I'm always like, is this soft or is it hard plastic? I don't know. How clean does it need to be? Neil Delamere, you've thrown things out before. Can you unpack this story for us?
I have. AI has been trained to recognize waste for recycling. So companies are trying to use AI, essentially, I think, to teach it to recognize rubbish by videoing it. So they've put a camera on a conveyor belt of trash. If ever there was a metaphor for the Fast and the Furious film franchise, this is it. If AI learns what rubbish items are which, then it can sort them easier. I think that is the reason. Or it's robot bin men. It is one of the two. If you hear them in the morning just singing away to themselves, my old man's a dustman, he wears a dustman's hat. But that's just a disguise. To fool these puny humans. Well, then it's the latter. If Optimus Prime is just emptying your recycling, then they're taking over the world. We apparently are throwing out more and more rubbish every year, and this is connected to the water story, actually. I was trying to figure out what is the big change recently, and it's vaping. And I think people need to go back to good old-fashioned cigarettes, because no water vapor is used there. So if you want to save the world, I would suggest you smoke more. I think that is what you can do. If Greta Thunberg has one message, just smoke real cigarettes more often, and that's, you've done your bit then.
I mean, you might be doing your bit to solve the overpopulation problem.
Absolutely. Pensions, that brings that sorts out pensions as well. I mean, fags sorts out a lot of problems now that I think about it.
Lose your sense of smell, don't need to wash as much.
So shorter showers. You see where I'm going with this?
Also, everyone looks cooler, and we are a society of dorks right now, and if there's one message I can put out to the children, it's that smoking is cool. It makes you look cool, and all of your friends are doing it.
If it was good enough for James Dean, look at him still knocking around. He's fine. He is. Don't let them tell you anything else. Everything else is a conspiracy. He is absolutely fine.
He's a rebel without a pulse.
Yes.
James?
I thought the amount of garbage here is surprising. So 2.2 2.24 billion tons of solid waste produced in 2020, which seems like a lot, particularly as we weren't doing much of anything in 2020. So producing solid waste seemed to be the main thing we were all focused on. And the problem is primarily plastic, which is shaping itself up to be one of the worst, best ideas we ever had. So plastic, in its history, went out to a wild early lead on the scoreboard, racking up points in things that hold my lunch and things that hold my shopping so I can make tomorrow's lunch categories. But since then, it's been really devastating loss after devastating loss for plastic in all categories other than most sea turtles killed, which I personally don't think should be a rewarded category, but who am I to argue with the umpire? It's not my game. This device, when we got into it, it's the device that tracks billions of waste objects per year, helps waste managers become more efficient and blah, and it blahs and blah, 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 snore, 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 snore. When did robots become bad? Do you remember being six and someone told you that one day robots will take all of our jobs and it was a good thing and that you were going to talk to robots all day and robots might kill us all, but if we get, like, they're only going to kill us all if they get very, very, very technical and persnickety about these three real rules we give them, and if we gave them a fourth rule that was like, no funny business, asshole, then we'd probably be fine, but now robots are as miserable as the rest of us.
And you can't wish for three wishes.
Exactly. It seemed like a pretty easy problem, Asimov, honestly.
Maybe that should have just been the first rule, shouldn't it? No funny business, asshole. That should have been it.
And now it's time for your reviews section. As you know, each week we ask our guest editors to bring in something to review out of 5 stars. Neil, what have you brought in for us this week?
I have been reviewing the Netflix version of I've been watching Drive to Survive, right, which is this Netflix version of Formula One, and it's absolutely brilliant. So they've just recently done the Netflix version of golf, and they have tried to make golf as exciting as Formula One. Now Formula One is tense, it is dramatic. At one point, I had one on the laptop, one on the TV, Roman Grosjean hit a wall at 150 miles an hour, got out of his car, what experts would describe as on fire. His onesie, I don't know if they call that, is aflame. His helmet is melted. I switched to the golf and it was like, oh, this is so tense here, as Rory McIlroy's ball has landed in slightly longer grass than he expected it to land in. Oh, who knows what's going to happen here? Flick back to the other one to see how Joan of Arc was getting on. Still on fire. He's still very much aflame, but now he's covered in gravel because he's clearly rolled himself and he looks like a Ferrero Rocher, but still on fire. Then he gets the onesie off, still on fire. Possibly shouldn't have worn that much Lynx Africa that morning. Flick back to the golf. It's like, oh my God. Tiger Woods is on the first. He's taken out a driver. Do you know what else takes out a driver? Fire. Fire also takes out a driver. So in terms, I'd like to review two things. Drive to Survive, 5 stars. But you cannot make golf as exciting as a proper dangerous sport. So Full Swing, 1 star.
I mean, that is a great review. Also, it has given me zero desire to watch Formula One driving. That sounds incredibly stressful.
Well, I mean, you watch after the season is over. So, you know, old Crispy Grosjean is fine. He drove a couple of laps with rashes for hands, but now he's absolutely fine. No, he's fine. He is genuinely fine. I wouldn't make these jokes if he wasn't. If he was really dead, I wouldn't do this.
But this is why I prefer the Fast and the Furious movie, because they show you a split second before every car crashes to show you that the car is empty. And so you feel like, I mean, yes, on one hand, it makes it feel like a hollow, stakeless experience, but that's also what's good about it.
I do have some really bad news about the James Dean jokes we were doing earlier on then.
Also in the Fast and the Furious film, if someone dies, they do come back 2 films later being like, oh, that? No, I slipped out just before that happened. It's fine. You weren't paying attention. But if you check,
I was a hologram, Han. Tokyo Drift 4.
I love these films. There is a moment in the most recent one where at first one person is rotoscoped into a scene from 5 films before, and then in a shock reveal, a second person is also rotoscoped into a scene they were not in.
I mean, that, yeah, that's genuinely delightful. I don't think it can get better than the pinnacle for me, The Fate of the Furious, in which Jason Statham is rescuing Vin Diesel's baby on a plane, and he puts noise-cancelling headphones on the baby while he punches a series of men to death so that the baby doesn't hear the violence. That is everything I want in a movie.
That's just good parenting.
What have you brought in for us to review this week, James?
So my review this week, I had a seance with the spirit of cricket, actually, this week, which is a bit of fun for me. I lit some candles and I invited the spirit of cricket in. Now, you have to understand that anyone who knows the afterlife knows this. There's quite a backlog in the afterlife. So the general category of English inventions from the 16th and 17th century have just been put in hell and will sort it out later. So the spirit of cricket is currently in hell and I had to summon it out of hell. So it was quite thrilled to be around, honestly. I have to also specify, not in hell specifically for the crime of making English people happy, but not in hell for the crime of making English people happy. I spoke to the spirit of cricket about what has happened to the modern game, and I have to say the spirit of cricket was aghast, mostly about, I would say, some mostly racist complaints, a few about women being allowed to watch. So I would say that not entirely unjustified to go back to hell after the seance. I think that's a fine place for us to keep the spirit of cricket for a while. But he actually had quite a dramatic ending, because noticing the spirit was out of its allotted area, but not technically dead yet, I stumped him and sent him back to the pavilion, which caused a huge extra amount of drama. So I'd have to say, overall, good chat, 4 stars.
I mean, what has the game come to if a noble batsman can't take a leisurely stroll mid-game? On the understanding that, you know, Bagsies, it's still there technically.
I watched the game and it seemed like a lot of the bowlers were deliberately aiming at the stumps, which I think, if we're out there to just have a hit and a good time, is a very rude thing to do.
Yeah, call that a friendly game.
I don't know anything about what's going on now, but the smugness from the two of you is warming, is warming my heart, my pale Celtic 800 years of oppression, can't get over a heart. Just the two of you. Just, you're so happy. It's beautiful.
This is our version of leaving the tap running. We just love the sound, even if we don't care that much about the actual happenstance.
This is Australian Braveheart. That's what this is.
Now it's time for pregnant whale news. And this is not the news that every woman at some point during a pregnancy, if she's having a pregnancy, feels like a whale. This is the news that Gladys, the viral orca who led a gang of orcas in attacking a series of boats in what may be seen as a metaphor for anti-capitalism, may have been pregnant when she started her anti-boat uprising. James, you've had a baby recently. Can you unpack this story for us?
Well, firstly, I say this is another sign of a social system that does not take care of mothers. There's nothing more important in the lead up to birth than the mother getting rest. And yet we see this poor orca having to work, having to lead an uprising instead of just sitting, relaxing, being calm, having a water birth, if that's your choice. And I understand for orcas, mainly is their choice. I find it a bit hippie stuff, but, you know, not my decision. That's fine. You keep to your birth plan. So this is all about White Gladys, which is an orca given that name, presumably because there were two Gladyses and no one felt comfortable referring to the other Gladys by their color. So White Gladys is a killer whale believed to be the ringleader of the orcas. This has been a tricky story for Australians, particularly to deal with, because we have a terrible history with anyone trying to stop the boats. But in this case, it's a good thing and we like it. I did like from this story that there is a conflict in the scientific world, which is one half of the scientific community, or one portion of the scientific community, theorize that she is acting out of revenge from some previous traumatic incident, which is amazing because also clearly pulling that out of her ass. Like, there was no detail there. It was just like, oh, it's probably revenge because something happened beforehand. This is John Wick style. It's John Willy, and their bravery's contagious. The other orcas joined on. And then the other orca experts said, oh, maybe she's just having a good time. Maybe it's fun to do this, which leads me to believe two things. Firstly, they don't understand how fun revenge is. And secondly, there's no such thing as an orca expert. There are just people who are closer to knowing things about orcas than the rest of us. But I don't think there is an orca expert out there.
Well, I mean, the orca attacks on boats off the coast of Spain and Portugal near the Iberian Peninsula have been happening almost daily. They're becoming increasingly common. So it does seem like it's either extremely fun or they're getting something out of it. But I heard a very sad story of what happened. Two people met on a boat, and then it was attacked by one of these whales, killer whales, as they are rudely known. And you know what that's called? That's called an awkward first date. Neil?
I love these cocky ocean pandas have a leader, White Gladys, as James said. I love the idea that there's this kind of idea that they were attacking yachts specifically, like that they can recognize yachts, like they're all swimming towards a boat. A White Gladys has done the thing that you used to see from Vietnam films when they're attacking a compound or something, and she's done all the arm movements and the mimes, and they're swimming directly towards this yacht, and then it's like, abort, it's a skiff, abort, 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 it's a skiff. Well, I thought that was okay. No, I said yachts are okay, or a schooner. What? No skiffs, we said, no skiffs. What about a dinghy? Does it have a sail? Well, it has a small sail. What? Is it a Lilo? I'm not sure. Just attack Atlantis, make up your mind. You can't, as my granny used to say, never trust a creature that looks like a dolphin penguin. It was one of the weirder things the granny used to say. I mean, she had some issues towards the end. But I think that and you should start smoking again, they're the two things I always took from granny's deathbed revelations. And I think she was right in this.
Well, I mean, it's really interesting because Gladys, during this uprising, has been a mother. She's orcas look after their babies for 2 years, which is, you know, a very nice and nurturing thing. But some of the scientists are speculating that this has to be trauma because she is risking her baby by bringing it into these boat attacks, which are not necessarily a very safe thing to do. I just think it means that we now know that White Gladys, the orca mother, is a Montessori parent, just bringing her child into the workplace and teaching it real life skills.
I think a Montessori parents are traditionally more on the side of the yachts than against them, but I understand.
Now it's time for relationships news, and this is the news that a mayor in Mexico has married an alligator-like reptile who he calls Princess Girl. And that's a sentence that, despite many years podcasting, I don't think I ever expected to say. Neil Delamere, you've married...
A crocodile?
I was just going to say you've married, but can you unpack this story for us?
Yes, it's a mayor in Mexico has married a caiman. And what is the difference between an alligator and a crocodile? Well, that is one of the major questions of our time. Zoologists agree that the former is generally seen later, whereas the latter is mostly commonly seen in a while. So that's the main reason between the two of them then. It has taken place in this Mexican town for 230 years to commemorate the peace between the Chontal and the Huave indigenous groups. Now, so the mayor just married... Well, so the mayor represents the Chontal king, and he marries the caiman that represents the princess girl. And apparently it's a symbol of the deity that brings the good harvest. I think this is an absolute sham. I've looked into it. A sham. She is not the caiman that caught the bouquet last year. So they are making a mockery of the whole thing. It was a very emotional occasion. Her family were on one side, his family were on the other. Her family cried tears. Nobody really believed them. which is my favorite joke. And
it's a good joke, man.
It's just a kind of a sweet thing, really. You know, I'm worried about how things are going to work out for them in the future, but I'm prepared to overlook that for the moment.
Well, the thing here is that this is not actually an instance of what has happened in this podcast and in the news cycle before, which is somebody conceiving an ill-advised passion for somebody across species or sentience barriers. This is a tradition that is repeated in a number of times, and he's representing his people, and it's kind of a ritual that is engaged in by the whole village. But I really think I had a moment of wondering whether, because it is a caiman, whether he just taken some wrong investment advice about where to put his resources.
So there's specifically the Cayman Archipelago. No, that's not right. The Cayman Spit. No, Cayman Peninsula. No, it's there. It's there, but I just don't know what it is. I don't know if I've ever told you this. I fed a crocodile as part of a thing for charity once, and they're absolutely terrifying. I got into the cage, and this huge alligator just went like a scouser trying to say the word knick-knack. And I looked at the guy and he went, "Oh, it's okay. You're just standing on our nest." And I was like, "Well, you should have told me that. Probably shouldn't be wearing this Lacoste t-shirt either." Absolutely terrifying. But she, in the princess girl in this, is smaller and is taped. So she can't have any mishaps with the mayor. But I want to know, does he marry one every single year?
I mean, we'll have to find out when we go back next year.
Well, okay, well, let's do that then.
James?
I mean, I'm happy for him, don't get me wrong. I mean, it would have been nice to be invited and not see the wedding for the first time on Instagram, but whatever, I'm happy for them. Princess Girl deserves to be happy with whoever it's with. Like, our dalliance doesn't come into it, in my opinion. I just want her to be happy, and clearly she is happy, and it's not with me, but whatever, that doesn't matter. I don't know what he has that I don't, but that's fine. I don't care. It's a little bit off the timeline of all of this, because they're a bit vague on when they started dating, which is odd because we broke up in the summer, and I remember that because it was one day after my mother's birthday when I had introduced her to all of my family. And it does make me wonder if my family was the problem, or if she realized we were getting serious, or whether she was just trying to hurt me. But I mean, if they were already seeing each other then that's news to me, and that's newsworthy of the gargle. But we don't know, and they won't say, and it doesn't matter because I've moved on and I'm doing fine. So I wish them nothing but the best. And look, all I'll say is they deserve each other. So I hope they're happy. I hope you're happy. I hope you're happy, Princess Girl. And you two deserve each other. That's all I have to say on the matter.
I mean, can you be the mayor and represent the union of two cultures, James? The real question.
I suspect I'm currently doing some of that, and it's not the mayor's side, but...
Can we just commend Ped of... What a booking of James has been, that he managed to get the one jilted lover from that Cayman. That is such cracking producing.
Look,
that is...
you think I'm the one jilted lover, but look, I don't...
She's been around, hey, is what you're saying. You do not impugn a crocodilian as long as I'm on this show, my friend. You can come for the orcas, that's fine. But if you go for the native smaller caimans in the Mexico region, I have a bone to pick with you, my friend. You and I are getting into a celebrity death roll where I drag you under the water because I have no workable lower jaw and just spin you until one of your limbs falls off, and then I hold it aloft as a trophy and hand it to your spurned lover.
If you think this is the first time one of my close friends has sided with Princess Girl over me, you have no idea of my history, and you just sound ignorant to everyone on this show. I don't see what the problem is here.
Well, if you think that you have any close friends, I have a bigger secret to tell you.
And now it's time for the show to end. Alas, I'm flipping through the ads at the back. Neil Delamere, have you got anything to plug?
Yeah, I do a podcast called Why Would You Tell Me That? And this week, so we talk about the weirdest things you could possibly conjure up, we get an expert on. And this week, we get a word into a language. We actually got a word into the Irish language that didn't exist yet. And we got the chief terminologist, Fergus na Gaeilge, to put it into the lexicon. So we were delighted with that. It's called Why Would You Tell Me That?
And James Colley, have you got anything to plug?
If you are in Australia, check out Gruen at 8:30 p.m. on Wednesdays. If you're not in Australia, fly to Australia. It's geo-blocked, so the easiest way is to just get on a plane and come here. and then, a book coming out next year, so we'll talk about that closer to the time. But if you see any book, remind yourself it could be mine one day.
Any book could one day be yours. Thank you to our roving reporters, C. Lips, who sent in the Earth Axis story, the White Gladys story, and Phil Dawson, who sent in the mayor culturally marrying the alligator story. So thank you. If you'd like to be a roving reporter, tweet us at HelloGarglers on Twitter while stocks last. And if you're on Blue Sky, I'm there and Mastodon, but I don't seem to be using any of them yet. We'll see. We'll see what emerges as the clear victor in this war of new things. James?
Can I say one thing just before we sign off? Princess girl, I really miss you, and I don't know if you're listening, but if you are, just reach out, okay? I know you've blocked me, so it has to be you, but just reach out.
I'm Alice Fraser. You can find me online at patreon.com/AliceFraser and join me for my weekly writers' meetings or my book club or my salons. That's Alice Fraser on Patreon. This is a Bugle podcast and Alice Fraser production. Your editor is Ped Hunter. Your executive producer is Chris Skinner. I'll talk to you again next week.
You can listen to other programs from The Bugle, including The Bugle, Catharsis, Tiny Revolutions, Top Stories, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
I'm going to kidnap Princess Girl because I reckon there's money to be made out of James. And what I'm going to send them body parts of her, but it'll just be luggage. So it'll be like a small purse and then a big kind of briefcase. And then if you don't pay up, like a full-on suitcase. Oh, this we could make money.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.